This is Chick Flick Fix. I'm Julia Scott.
And I'm AJ Knox.
We watch chick flicks and rom-coms and decide if they need fixing. Can we make them better or can we make them weird? And if you want to toss a coin to your fixer, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/chickflickfix.
Was that a toss a coin to your Witcher joke?
Yes. Did you appreciate it?
I really did appreciate it.
This week we're talking about The Truth About Cats and Dogs from 1996. It's directed by Michael Lehman and written by Audrey Wells, and it stars Janine Garofalo, Uma Thurman, and Ben Chaplin and a giant dog. Audrey Wells also wrote the screenplay for Under the Tuscan Sun, which she also directed.
Okay.
And she wrote Shall We Dance and The Hate U Give. Lehman directed Heathers and 40 Days and 40 Nights, and like that triptych of these three movies is very interesting, but he's mostly done a ton of TV. Fun trivia, Garofalo actually did get to work as a radio host like 10 years later because she hosted Majority Report for 2 years, and apparently she'd always wanted to do radio. Garofalo apparently was very like disappointed after the fact in this movie. There's a quote here from the AV Club. I think it's soft and corny, and the soundtrack makes you want to puke, and everybody's dressed in Banana Republic clothing. The original script and the original intent was very different than what it wound up being when it became a studio commercial film. It was originally supposed to be a small-budget, independent film where there would be much more complexity to all the characters, and Abby and the guy don't wind up together at the end. End quote. I've tried to find more about this, like, original script,
because I think
what happened, as I understand it, is that like they got Uma Thurman and then all of a sudden like it just ballooned, and she has called it like an anti-feminist movie, which I think is not a fair assessment. Like, you could call it, you know, soft and corny, but I wouldn't call it anti-feminist, because it actually, like, I would say that this does pass the Bechdel test, because they talk about, like, how they feel and not just in relation to guys. And it also shows these two very insecure women forming a friendship and forming a bond.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'll get into it, but the Cyrano de Bergerac quality of this movie, where her biggest fault is that she is not tall, thin, and blonde, like, is, I don't, it's a weird thesis for the movie.
Well,
for me,
and again, we'll get into it, but I think that, because I'm also like, you know, you have the obvious Cyrano, but I think the point isn't that Janine Garofalo is like objectively ugly, not even next to Uma Thurman. It's that, you know, she's insecure, and definitely not just out of her brain, because, like, you know, not it's the economy stupid, it's like it's the patriarchy stupid. Like, just because she is, you know, short and a brunette and doesn't look like a cover girl, she has probably all her life just been told that she's not pretty enough. And I think that's the more interesting point. Part of me is also like, could we have like an actually ugly woman or a fat woman or, you know, something like that? But there is that sort of, it's kind of the same as with Bridget Jones. Like, the point there is that she's not actually fat, but that, you know, she is insecure and it doesn't have anything to do with anything. It's all inside her head. It doesn't matter what he would think of her. It's that she actually, my husband had a very interesting point where he originally thought that she just like claimed that she was tall and blonde because she didn't actually want to meet him. She just like saw the picture, which I was like, I have never thought of it that way. And that's a really interesting way to go into this movie.
Yeah.
That it's not even that she's insecure. She's just like, I don't even want to tell you what I look like in case you find me somewhere else. So I thought that was a really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Like,
that's a different take. I like that.
Yeah. So here's, I will have a hard time being objective about this movie. I've seen it at least a dozen times, if not more. Having seen it that many times, I messed up my knitting watching this because I was so like, just, you know, because it's been a while since I saw it now, but like I was just so in it.
Yeah.
It's also like, it is very much one of my formative movies. I can quote so much of it, and for a long time, and it might still be, when people used to ask, you know, especially if you're, you know, doing your thesis on romantic comedies, people will ask, so what's your favorite? And part of me always wants to go, I'm deconstructing and, you know, mocking them, not mocking, but yeah. like I'm deconstructing and intellectualizing them. Good is not the point. But this was often my answer, and I would still put it in my sort of at least top five or top three.
This will be a fun episode then.
All right. So, but we've mentioned this sometime before, and you had seen this before, right?
I have seen this probably once or twice. I probably saw this in the theater. That would be my best guess, is I probably saw this in the theater. And I do remember this was kind of a cultural phenomenon, this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it had a lot of buzz. It was, like, very popular. Like, even some of the lines, even in some of the bigger movies that we've watched, I couldn't point to a line, but at the point in the movie where she's like, you can love your pets, but just don't love your pets. I was like, oh, I remember that line. Like, that was in the trailers, I feel like. That was, you know, that was one of the big lines from the movie. It got a big laugh. So yeah, there's definitely plenty in this that, like, even though I've only seen it maybe once or twice at most, I remembered.
I think, I don't even know if it came up on theater, like on, in cinema theaters,
mm-hmm.
that's not a word, in Sweden. I just watched it on like a cable movie channel. And like a lot of people in Sweden that I talk to haven't seen this when I mention or recommend it. So maybe I also came into it with like a completely different, I just watched it and loved it. I also will posit that this movie contains one of the best movie sex scenes ever.
The phone sex scene?
Well, there's no other sex scene in here, so yes.
But I was kind of surprised by that scene. Like, it was very frank,
mm-hmm.
without, but not like super explicit.
And there's little to no male gaze in it, which it very easily could have gotten like.
It could have gone like, oh, she like, oh, face, you know, it could have gone like.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of places. But yeah, it was like,
it was fun.
It was funny and like fun at the same time. And you really felt like they're both kind of like, are we going to do this?
They even say like, are we doing what I think I'm doing? And because the buildup to it feels so real too. Like they're having this just like talking about everything. They check in feelings on pickles and tuna. Like, and I think a lot of people have had that. We talked before about how cars make you honest. And I think phones also make you mm-hmm. honest in a way. Because you don't have to look at the other person. You don't have to, like, you're just there and you're talking. So it's like the end of this, like, 7 or 8 hour
phone call.
Phone date.
On her cordless phone, that battery would have died.
maybe she switched, the sets, the handsets. Okay. I'm not even going to say briefly. Take your time. What is this movie about, AJ?
Don't touch that dial. It's Dr. Abby Barnes with the truth about cats and dogs, and you're on the air.
I have a cat, and he licked up and down my face, and now I got this rash.
How long did this tongue bath last?
About 3 hours.
Okay, this is a good time to talk about limits. You can love your pets, but just don't love your pets.
Abby was the kind of woman who knew exactly what she wanted.
3 years, no sex?
One can survive, you know, this is the electronic age.
Noelle was exactly the kind of woman.
You know, you burp and guys think it's adorable, you puke and they line up to hold your hair back.
Every man wanted. Then one day, Abby got a call.
When I've got a dog here, that's where control escapes.
Gave a little advice.
Get down on all fours. You're going to have to approach him in a submissive position.
And told a little lie.
I'm 5'10", blonde, hard to miss.
Okay, so truth about cats and dogs. Start off, we're in L.A. near Santa Monica. Like, I know this area very well because I had spent a lot of time around that area. And Janine Garofalo is going to work. And the first thing I thought, this was like kind of trippy. The very first thing I thought as she was walking down that little road in front of the ocean was, do I miss L.A.? And I was like, no, I don't. I don't miss L.A. But there is something about the L.A. of this movie, which is like very like pleasant.
It's charming and quirky.
And small town feeling. I feel the same way when I watch Mixed Nuts. They're in Venice mm-hmm. Beach, and it has this, like, yeah, it has this small-town vibe to it, which, like, Venice Beach is, like, busy and loud and, like, can't find parking.
Do you maybe miss being around people?
Maybe that's it. That might be, yeah, quarantine may have gotten to me. So yeah, so she's heading into work at her radio station. And of course, the first thing that happens is a man holds the door open for a bunch of women who are like tall, skinny, model-y women. And then doesn't hold it open for her. And then she kind of follows them into the elevator. And you very quickly get a visual. She is the short, regular woman amidst like all the models, right? And then I also had that moment of like, oh, yes, this is also what it's like to be like a normal person in LA. I get it.
I read maybe even today or yesterday, I finished a book called What We Don't Talk About When We Talk About Fat by Aubrey Gordon, who also makes an amazing podcast called Maintenance Phase with Michael Hobbs. But she was talking about how when people talk to her about living in LA and they're like, oh, it must be a horrible place for a fat person. She's like, yes, but no, because right. There's this tiny, like, insular, beautiful people world. But most of LA is so big and so diverse right. That it's like it's better for fat people than many other places, which I thought was really interesting. So it's like, yes, you can become super insecure if you go there, but it's possible that it's worse in that aspect for someone who is like stereotypically hot adjacent.
Well, I mean, I will tell you, I had professors in college in LA tell me, and others, and men, women say like, okay, you're too fat to be the lead and you're too skinny to be the fat best friend. So pick one.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that can be like a little like, oh, okay.
Yeah. But if you're just like, you know, I am an admin at a regular place.
Right.
Or I do radio.
Yeah.
I have a butt for radio.
Yeah. Well, that's the funny thing, too, is like we're all going in. But I assume that she's in like a multimedia office. Like they probably do TV. Mm-hmm. They probably do all sorts of stuff. But yeah, that's an interesting point, though, about LA. I haven't thought about that because it is so easy to kind of look at LA and go like, ugh. And having lived there. But I also think, yeah, probably because I lived there and was doing acting stuff, mm-hmm. it's you're probably further into that insular world than like most LA-tians.
Because mm-hmm. I also see her as, because, you know, she's a vet first and then she's gotten this radio gig because I'm assuming like she's personable and fun. And I'm assuming that that also means that her friends and her like circle are not entertainment people.
Correct, probably, mostly, yeah.
Because she isn't a broadcaster as like her goal in her career.
Yeah. Well, and this is one of those interesting things. I kind of thought about this, and I rarely think about this in most movies, but like, who are the main character's friends? And for both her and Uma Thurman, I was like, do you just have like no close friends?
I thought a lot about that too. And for Uma Thurman, I could see it being like, you know, she's moved from a small town, and I'm sure that she has focused a lot on men.
Yeah.
To the detriment of any other social connections, and probably has this idea that she can't have female friends. You know, like,
yes.
Girls are so bitchy or they don't like me because I'm hot, which sometimes is true, usually is not. And for Janine Garofalo, I could see her just like with being super insecure and, you know, maybe also just like focusing a ton on, you know, on school to be a vet and all that. It can be hard to like build and keep relationships. I'm kind of hoping that it's just like most of her friends don't live in LA.
Yeah.
So, and I think this is also one of those where like also kind of makes sense that she's like, well, Noelle knows about all of this that's going on. I can't tell it because I can't tell anyone else because I'll just sound deranged. So I'll just tell about like, oh, my new bow that I got from my violin and this chaos she only talks about with Noelle. But like I could see it being, because she seems friendly with her coworkers, for instance.
Yeah.
And they seem kind of also like, all right, here to go with the shenanigans.
I would be really interested to like kind of break this down. Like, what are rom-coms where the main characters have like a best friend that they talk to about what is happening to them in this like wacky mm-hmm. romantic situation. And what are the ones where like it is so insular that they only talk to themselves? Cause I feel like you almost always have, and Jamie Foxx kind of plays that role but like only very slightly in this, like his role is pretty small, but like they don't really have people to like bounce this off of. Mm-hmm. It's all bouncing off each other.
In Sweden, we call that person a ball wall, someone you can bounce a ball at.
So, like, this is a movie without ball walls.
Yeah, and yeah, because, you know, you need, but that's because, like, for the story, you often need someone to, yeah, like, reflect your thoughts onto. And sometimes it can be like, I can only reflect this bizarre thing going on with one person.
Yeah.
Because they already know, because, you know, my phone fell out of my pocket and then my Filofax something, you know,
right,
where you maybe don't want to. That would actually, it would be really funny, like, if she had other friends and had to, like, you know, go to brunch with them and try to think of anything else to talk about other than this absolute chaos.
Yeah. I don't know. It was just, I was, like, for whatever reason, this movie made me think about their personal lives in a way that most other rom-coms don't.
It's also possible that she's, like, done the vet thing at a smaller station and just been picked up. Like, she moved to LA maybe, like, you know, six months ago.
That could be.
Because I could also see, because I have heard people, like, in general, people are like, you can't make friends as an adult.
Yeah.
But also, like, LA is hard to make friends with because you basically have to drive across a whole state to meet someone where they live or for. So, like, it can take a while.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So we meet Jeanine Garofalo's Abby. She's going to work at her radio station. And she hosts a talk show where she basically, it's like Car Talk, but for animals. And you call and you're like, my animal's making this kind of noise. What's wrong with it? Should I take it into the shop? Yeah, it only makes it when. Do you know who the callers are? The two call-in people. I don't know who the woman is, but the first call-in person is David Cross.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second call-in person to the radio is Robin Williams.
I thought it was Robin Williams. And I was like,
and it's like, ooh.
Actually, I forgot to look it up now that you mentioned it, because I was like, is that Robin Williams or is that someone doing a passable Robin Williams doing
something?
No,
I think it's I'm almost positive it's like an uncredited Robin Williams cameo.
Yeah, because all of them just sound, what they sound to me like is where you're like, we don't have enough calls today. So you just get people in the office to try to sort of, you know, make their voice a little different and call in with something, anything.
Yeah. And
you probably don't want to know how many, like, letters to the editor and things in your local newspaper is just someone who, like, an intern who was made to have opinions about traffic cones or something.
Yeah. I just looked it up. The female caller was Marilyn Rashkub, who is from 24, if you remember 24. She was Chloe.
She's done a ton of stuff.
Yeah, she's done a ton of stuff. That's what I remember her from, is 24. That is now I want to go watch 24 again. That was a great show. Anyway, so we are introduced to her and her wacky call-in folks who are, you know, trying to figure out what's wrong with their animals, and she can help them out really easily. She can kind of diagnose it. And this is where you get the line, you can love your pets, but just don't love your pets. And then Brian from Venice calls in, and this is the first time we see the caller, and it's Brian from Venice. He's Ben Chaplin. He's got a very sexy English accent.
And a dog.
And
I love what she says, what's wrong with your
dog?
Because she's mimicking him. And here is my first huge gripe with this movie. Why does he get a dog from the pound for a shoot?
Yeah.
A, there are a ton of agencies that will do that for you. So you get a trained dog. But also, like, was he going to give it back to the pound? Or was he just going to, like, set it free?
It's unclear, but he clearly has no idea what he's doing. And he's a bad photographer for that.
Yeah, and only later is he like, well, I've decided to keep him. And I'm like, what did the dog ever do to you? Also, get trained animals, especially when they're of that size.
Oh, my God.
I can't quite figure out if he's making, like, a commercial or if it's just a mom who wanted really weird pictures of her son.
Yeah, because it is, like, a weird little – well, it's a photo shoot, too. So it's, like, it wouldn't even be a commercial. It would be, like, an ad.
Well, an ad.
Like a magazine ad or something. Also, I just looked up Ben Chaplin's IMDb. And I got to read you the first line of his bio. With charm to spare and dark, unassumingly handsome looks, British actor Ben Chaplin arrived on the Hollywood scene in smart and sexy fashion with the comedy The Truth About Cats and Dogs. Oh, my God. I want...
That publicist. I move.
Yeah, that publicist is going for it.
I like the publicists who write for IMDb, and I'm assuming they also moonlight writing real estate copy.
Yeah. With a charming backsplash in mid-century interior, this house has been on the market for 17 months.
And unassuming bloodstains.
Definitely not the scene of a triple murder homicide. That's the same thing. So, yeah, so he calls in and he's got a dog wearing roller skates and he's trying to calm this dog down. She helps him do that. And basically he calls back in and asks her for drinks. And she's like, sure. Yeah, we can get drinks. And he's like, well, how will I know what you look like? And she describes basically Uma Thurman. Because I couldn't tell. Is that a picture of Uma Thurman? Because it kind
of yeah, it is a picture of Uma Thurman because she's like, hey, I know her because she's been like looking through a magazine yeah. earlier, and she's like, she lives in my building, and it is very clearly Uma Thurman.
Yeah.
So she's and again, I have never thought of it that way, but I really like the concept that she's just like
yeah,
crazy you, person with a roller skate dog has, you know, because this is also. One of those things that so many women have to explain to so many men is like why we don't just turn men down
yeah.
who hit on us in public.
Because men are unpredictable and violent yeah. and
there's
shitty.
So many stories of men being shitty to women who turn them down or don't give them enough attention or whatever it might be. So like, yes, in theory, we just say no. And otherwise, we're like, no.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, yeah. So, she's like, well, what do I look like? I'm 5'10". I'm blonde. You can't miss me.
Apparently, Janine Garofalo is like pretty much 5 foot even. And they had to like use the classic Hollywood trick of like, she had to stand on boxes to fit in frame.
Oh my gosh.
With Uma Thurman.
Oh, that we call that the Tom Cruise hack.
I was trying not to say Tom Cruise.
Classic Hollywood. You know, the Top Gun thing, the Minority Report thing. yeah, so don't worry, he doesn't listen to this podcast. And Tom Cruise, if you do listen to this podcast, go ahead and sponsor us on Patreon. And we won't ever say anything about your height again.
But we won't tell you our personality types or hold on to two weird tin cans.
No. When I lived in Boston, somebody came into my roommate worked at a UPS store, and somebody came in to get something like copied and like put into a presentation folder. And he was working on it, and he made an extra copy for himself, which is, like, totally illegal. But he brought it home, and he was like, guys, you have to read this. And it was a Scientology thing of, like, how to get to the next tier. And it was creepy. It was very weird. It was like, very transparently, like, this is the money you pay. This is how much money mm-hmm. you need to get to the next tier to talk to, you know, Lord Morglorb of... you know, the Forgotten Realm. Anyway. So, yeah. So, we go back to Janine Garofalo's apartment, and Uma Thurman is in her building, and Uma Thurman's boyfriend is abusive, and he's calling Uma Thurman a B, and then he calls her a dumb B, and Janine Garofalo comes up to him and is like, oh, sorry, were you talking to me? And then he calls her a dumb, ugly B. And it's very, like, aggressive, and she kind of shoos him away.
I love that there's a lot of dumb bitches
yeah.
in L.A. like,
yeah.
When she's just like, are you dumb bitch too? Or keep getting each other's mail. And it's just, again, like, I feel like there are a lot
she's, like,
of these
robbing
sort of,
it of its power from him.
Yeah, and I feel like there are these very clear, like, sort of nuggets from this sort of more acidic, I'm assuming, original indie versions like these
yeah,
kind of
that felt like out of a different movie almost.
But she is very quippy throughout this
oh
movie.
Yeah,
I mean so many good lines in this movie.
Yeah, I mean absolutely this movie's like clearly like her with her in mind, right? Like kind of Uma Thurman could have been any kind of classically pretty, you know, A-lister from the mid-90s
or again not even an A-lister, just
yeah.
tall and leggy.
Yeah.
But I do really appreciate Uma Thurman in this.
Yeah.
Like she really manages to find that sort of, you know, beautiful, insecure, I don't know. Anyway.
So, so she kind of shoos him off and they kind of form a little bond over, you know, the way they're treated and Uma Thurman's kind of new in town and all this stuff. So, Uma shows up at Janine's work at her radio station, and this is the first time we get that kind of anyone can walk into this radio station unannounced at any time.
Where part of me is like, actually, yes, if you're blonde and leggy and beautiful, and or very plain and carrying a clipboard, but that's a different
movie. It's like in 30 Rock when she dates John Hamm, and he can like get anything he wants just because he's very attractive.
No, I was actually thinking about that too, like anyone can get in because... You know, I've worked in a ton of different newsrooms and organizations like that. And, you know, over the past 10 or 15 years, security has just gotten tighter and tighter for many reasons. Yeah. But like you can also, there are specific, you know, pinpoints where there have been specific attacks on newsrooms mm-hmm. and magazines and stuff. So, you know, it's not interesting is the wrong word. But just like to see how much, you know, tighter and tighter and how many more sort of airlocks you have to build between. I mean, this is in many ways a very 90s movie mm-hmm. because of the sort of all of the logistics of like phones.
Right. And
getting into buildings and.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's kind of it does feel a little bit like a relic in that way. Not a relic in that it's like old and dusty, but like this is a very much a movie of its time. And I think that also, like, speaks to Jeanine Garofalo in it, too.
But I think a lot of it would work to transplant almost, like, right over to today. Like, it would maybe be like, oh, you know, there...
She'd be a podcaster?
Probably. but also, like, you know, maybe they'd be chatting instead. They wouldn't be FaceTiming, obviously. But maybe they'd be FaceTiming and she has, like, sour cream on her face.
She'd do, like, a Tinder profile, but, like, it'd be Uma's picture or something.
No, like, again, most of it could just be the same. Because she's not, you know, for a while, she's not actively trying to trick him. It's all just very confusing. But, I mean, a lot of it, so funny. Because I love that, like, the beauty counter scene with the free radicals. First, I love it just because, like, it's so funny.
Yeah.
Because they're staging a coup.
Yeah. Again, I think probably from the indie movie.
Yeah. And, like, I have, in you know, modern memory, bought an eye cream... Because a woman at a beauty counter was like, you really need an eye cream. I didn't buy it from her. I bought it online later and a different one than she recommended because I wasn't going to give her the satisfaction. But I came home and like didn't quite do the thing of like stretching my face out in the mirror.
Yeah. Anyway, Uma Thurman, Noelle comes to Abby's work and they're kind of in the recording booth talking about like, oh, thank you. You know, my boyfriend's shitty, blah, blah, blah. Janine's like, oh, hold on, I have to go get something. So Janine leaves, and then Uma puts on the headphones, and she's, like, pretending to be a radio announcer. And, of course, that's when Brian from Venice comes in with his dog, and he sees her through the glass, and it's exactly as Janine described on the phone. And he's like, oh, that's Abby. And then his dog breaks away.
And here is... You know, regardless of her lie or not, where I'm like, this is only romantic because she finds him hot.
Yeah.
Because showing up to someone's work after they blew you off,
yep.
Coming up to their work. Also, it's such a dude thing to do to be like, we had a connection. And it's like, it's her job to be nice to
right.
you. Not quite. It's not quite on the level of like a server.
Right.
But basically, like her job is to talk to nut jobs who love their pets.
Right.
And like be personable and fun over the radio.
Yeah.
You did not necessarily have a special connection.
Yeah.
With this vet over the radio.
Although,
and after she blew you off.
Although the movie does. Like, make the moment where he's, like, trying to tame the dog and, like, kind of going up to the dog. It gets, like, very close in on both of their faces. Like, it does feel very mm-hmm. intimate. And so the movie does kind of set that up.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you are
and
right. Like
also,
he has no...
when he is talking to her after and, like, asking her out, you know, they are very sort of jokey, flirty.
Yeah.
But he comes to her work and stands outside her giant window.
Yes.
Not cool.
And so his dog breaks free of his leash, of course, and runs into the studio. And Uma Thurman is terrified of dogs, which we find out very quickly. And then Janine walks in and the dog runs up to her and she's like, I know this dog. And I'm like, how do you know this dog?
Because he sent a picture.
I know.
He sent a picture to the...
Like, to immediately recognize an animal, I don't know. Like...
She could smell him through the phone.
Yeah. And so it starts. So Abby says to Noelle, she's like, okay, just play along. You're me. And she's like, okay. And we get the beginning of this kind of, she's pretending, Noelle is pretending to be Abby. And Abby is pretending to be like Noelle's friend slash...
Dadonna.
Yeah. And I kind of, she says, Dadonna. And she kind of stumbles over the name she makes up. And I kind of was hoping that her name for the whole movie was going to stay Dadonna.
Dadonna.
But it's,
yeah, same.
They figure out, they make it Donna very quickly. But I'm like, oh, damn. Dadonna would be such a fun version. They start hanging out with Brian. And at one point, they have to help a turtle, give a turtle a shot. And...
It's a hilarious scene, but where it's like, we need to give it in his leg, and it's like, his legs are out the whole time, and it's only his head that comes out. If they'd said, like, it needs to be given in the back of the neck, but
right.
Whatever.
And so they're like, well, and it's like, well, how do I get the leg is out? And she goes, you have to poke its butt, to put your finger at its butt. And then you get, like, the wrapping the finger in saran wrap, and then the classic, like, here we go. And then the turtle, a shot of the turtle's head going, whoa!
It's so stupid, and it's so funny.
So dumb, but first of all, I'm like, that is a big finger. That is a big finger in a tiny turtle.
Well, maybe she didn't, like, poke it in the butt.
Just on.
You can poke your pet, just don't poke your pet.
And I also, I feel like that shot was in the trailer. Like, the turtle's head going, like, what? Like,
probably.
Trying to make it be, like, a little wackier comedy than it is. So, yeah, then they go to the mall, and Uma's kind of showing her around, like, some skincare products. And that's where she's like, yeah, the lady behind the counter is like,
This regimen.
This will get rid of the free radicals on your face. And she goes, well, what skincare regimen do you have? She goes, the regimen? So what? What's your skincare regime? She's like, what regime? The regime from which the radicals are trying to break free? Are we
staging a coup?
Selling face cream is staging a coup. And I was like, that is really good. That's really good writing. And it's perfectly Janine Garofalo. I love it.
Look at your face. And like that speech of like, you are falling apart, you are decrepit, you are lonely,
yeah,
nobody likes you.
Yeah. And this is also where we like start to get a sense of the fact that like Uma is also in her own way very like self-conscious and you know, struggles with feeling accepted and things like that and feeling her own worth.
And I really, really appreciate that Noelle gets to stay kind of dim.
Yeah.
And that is never, that's never like held up as a negative specifically. It's not like, oh, you know, Abby is so smart and Noelle is so dumb. It's more that like, she is not the kind of intellectual that Brian is.
Right.
And she like can't read these complicated books, but she also kind of comes to accept it where she's like, this book was too much for me. And that's fine. Where it's like, I'm not dumb. I'm just not this other thing. And I really, really appreciate that. They do it in a really, really nice way.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, there is that kind of classic, because that's also the Cyrano thing. Cyrano is like a poet and a, you know, intellectual, and whoever the guy is like more of a jock, right? So it's kind of like, I don't know.
And I also, this is again, I don't know if my husband was sort of sucking up to his more Cyrano than Roxanne girlfriend or wife. But he was like, because they have that whole thing about like someone who's really attractive, if you don't know them, they can become more ugly.
Yeah.
And someone else can become really pretty if you like them. And he was like, well, it's not that he, you know, falls in love with Noelle because she's pretty. He falls in love with Noelle because he's already started to fall in love with
Abby.
Yeah. And when like there's also a pretty face with that, like we're never given
it embellishes, you know. It
yeah, so it's not that he's like, oh, she's so pretty. I mean, you do still have the sort of complication of like, well, would he have fallen the same way if she hadn't been? Possibly not. Or maybe as a photographer he's really tired of models, who knows. But I kind of like that perspective of like, it's not just that it's the perfect package, it's just like he would be primed to fall for almost anyone who he thought was Abby because, you know.
Well, I will tell you, like, when I was, you know, when I was a teenager, my celebrity crushes were, like, Janine Garofalo, Darlene from Roseanne. So, like, you know, like, she's not unattractive. And that is one of the things that, like, that was kind of, that's one of my biggest hurdles of just, like, the movie's kind of thesis. You have to kind of divorce the movie's thesis from, like, what is going on in Janine Garofalo's head or her character's head.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like,
yeah, because I kept confusing, I think that isn't
her own, like, feelings of inadequacy with the movie's.
Yeah, it's not clear enough if we're supposed to be like, oh, she's objectively ugly. Right. She doesn't get a makeover, you know?
Yeah.
and yeah, because I think the point that needs to be clearer and the way that I've always read it, kind of, I mean, that's not true. When I was a teenager, I was like, yes, I am short and dumpy, and Janine Garofalo is short and dumpy, not really, but next to Uma Thurman. So I am ugly. She is not ugly, but she's, you know, whatever. But I think the point is that, like, she doesn't have the capability to go into any situation thinking, because, you know, she's, I'm sure that her whole life, her thing has been that she's smart and funny.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, and because Uma Thurman is pretty, she's never had to compensate for anything.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that was my, like, biggest hangup. With the movie, it was like trying to figure out, like, is this the movie's idea of worth, or are we kind of in Abby's head about it?
You know how I think we can know that it's not? She's wearing makeup.
Oh, yeah.
If she was supposed to be objectively plain and ugly, she wouldn't be wearing makeup and, like, nice lipstick, yeah, maybe, and stuff.
So, you know, Brian and Noelle start hanging out, and they're just not, like, really jiving. And so they start phone flirting. So Abby actually starts phone flirting with him. And this is where they, like, form their real bond. And they kind of flirt each, learn everything about it. And then he's making a tuna sandwich. And he says, pickles or no pickles on tuna? And she goes, no pickles on tuna fish sandwich. And I'm like, you are wrong. You are objectively wrong. Tuna fish sandwich.
Objectively wrong.
Tuna fish sandwich absolutely gets pickles. The brightness helps lift the tuna, which is otherwise a very mild fish.
And it cuts the fattiness. Yep. You get some crisp.
Yep. So I am all for, I'm team pickle. And yeah, I'm disappointed in Janine Garofalo in that moment.
And he picks the pickles.
Yeah,
off,
and then he takes the pickles off the sandwich he's making.
Which is cute.
Yeah, it is very funny. Because it is also, that is like a show of, like, oh, like, I'm listening to this person. I'm trusting this person, even though she can't see what I'm doing at all. And yeah, then we get, like, the fun little phone sex scene. And then she, like, in the little afterglow, invites him over without thinking. And then we get, like, this, like, oh, no.
She just agrees that I wish you were here, too.
Yeah, he's like,
which is more of, like, a, you know.
Yeah, and then it's like, great, I'll be there in 10. And it's like, oh, no. So she, like,
and it's a really good frantic,
yes,
scene to this, like, sort of pop punk song. And my favorite part of it 90s. Is when she sits down, crosses her legs, and brushes her hair for 3
yeah.
seconds.
And it's all kind of slightly sped up. And yeah, so she's, like, tidying up, and then she does the Mrs. Doubtfire thing. She grabs a jar of mayonnaise and throws a bunch of it on her face and throws an eye mask on and wraps herself. And goes,
and then never actually comes out from behind the curtain. Right. So none of that was.
And then, yeah, so she basically goes to the window. They do a little Romeo and Juliet thing where she's like, sorry, you can't come in. And he goes, and this is another thing where it's like, well, this is creepy. So he asks her to toss him down something that she's been wearing. And I'm like, that is, no, I don't know that I would. And so she throws him a shoe.
Which is also, it's funny because if she had, like, tossed just, you know, a ratty band shirt, you would still have the possibility of, like, she and Noelle wear
right.
completely different perfumes.
Or that, like, he would see her wearing something very similar. You know, like, you kind of expect.
Yeah, but the shoe is, like, safe territory. Except I am assuming that a 5 foot nothing Janine Garofalo and a 5 foot
they have different size
10
feet.
Or 11 Uma Thurman wear different size shoes. Then again, I'm only 5'5 and I wear, like, a 9 or 10, so. I'm folded in the wrong place.
I was kind of expecting that to become a Cinderella moment later, but it never really comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we get a little bit more going on, you know, just kind of a little bit more of the general kind of growth of the characters. And then Uma Thurman says, sew buttons, and kind of follows up somebody's sew with the word buttons. And I'm like, oh my God, that's where that comes from.
Well, it is something that old ladies say.
Well, and I say, if somebody's like, so, I always say a needle pulling thread. Anyway.
Because you're an old lady.
So they basically decide like that this situation is untenable, and they plan to have Uma be at Brian's place when Abby's show is on so that he can hear, like, this is the way they're...
But before that, they have the, like, get drunk and try to figure yes. out what his type yes. is. And again, like, the who would you be want to be stuck in Biodome yeah.
and the
with Time's Woman of the Year or...
Yes, there's that moment where that's how they try to find out if he's into looks or brains. And he's kind of into both.
Which a lot of people are. It's just that there's no necessarily objective,
yeah.
like, who's...
And that is kind of a fun scene of them all getting drunk. But that is also where you start to see Janine Garofalo, like, feeling kind of, you know, sad. Like, she's like, I want to be the person he's flirting with, but he's flirting with Uma, even though every time they talk, they have a really good connection.
And these even clearer scenes where I start to get that sort of weird, uncomfortable feeling in my palms and the soles of my feet. And I'm just like, I know this yeah. hurt and I don't like it because she's just there and hearing about... You know, how, you know.
How great. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really hard, I'm assuming, in a situation like that to try to be like, well, he's, you know, talking about my personality because at that point you're kind of sick of having a great personality,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. That is a rough scene. I mean, it's a fun scene, but it's also like, it is a very real scene. So yeah. So they decide that this is the plan. Uma's going to be there when the radio station's on, then they'll have to like kind of confront the truth. Uma goes over there, and then she can't bring herself to do it. And I couldn't tell if it's
partially because she's had sugar for the first time in 8 years, yeah. probably.
But I also couldn't figure out if like it's because she's starting to like feel feelings for him, or because he says that she's smart and like nobody's ever said that to her before, mm-hmm. and so she's kind of like becomes enamored by that. But anyway. She decides I can't go through with it. She goes, oh my God, I have to be at the radio station. The show starts in 10 minutes. And so he frantically drives through the radio station. She breaks the radio, hoping that he won't hear that the radio show has started. She runs inside. As she's running inside, he fixes the radio and turns it on, and he hears Abby's voice while he can see Uma Thurman. And so you get a sense of like, oh, cover's blown. He follows her in. She makes it up into the booth just in time. He gets there and she's like, yeah, we were late, so we ran a pre-recorded show. I'm like, oh, we're getting really complicated now. So this is another thing, too. There's like the scene where they're getting drunk where he's like taking photos of them and stuff. And they're like posing and doing like, and I know she's supposed to be like uncomfortable with her own appearance. But like there is occasionally times where I'm like, is Janine Garofalo uncomfortable or is Abby uncomfortable? And there's a couple times where I felt a little bit of the bleed through of the actor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And this is where also like the creepiness turns the other way, where you get the like they go upstairs because Noel says the next day, you know, we started making out, and then he yeah. kept seeing Abby and I couldn't. And I'm like, here's where he is making out yeah. with someone under false pretenses. Like, yes, he does find her attractive, but he thinks that they yeah. are connecting.
And they're not.
And it's that gets yeah. icky too.
So their friendship starts to fall apart, and Uma kind of realizes she's ruined a friendship, and yes, that he doesn't really love her. He loves Abby. And so she kind of calls it off with him, and while they're kind of on the outs, Brian starts hanging out with Abby. And at one point, he like recites a list of things that he loves about Abby, and Abby tries to like insinuate like, oh, and also because she's beautiful, right? He says, no, that's doesn't matter. And this is kind of where the movie started to lose me a little bit. It was like there's such a focus on like the beauty, even though I know he says it doesn't really matter, that it did kind of feel like the movie was like hinging on this idea that Abby is like objectively unattractive. And I know we've gone over it, so we don't need to, but that's my biggest hang up about it. But anyway, so you know, she says, well, I'm really glad to hear you say that. And as he's walking away, he sees a poster of Abby. And it's the first time he's seen a picture of Janine Garofalo where it says Abby, because in the radio station, her photo on the wall is just a photo of a dog and a cat because she has a pet show. And so he realizes it's her. And then Uma and Janine make up. And then Brian comes to the roller to the radio station with a paper bag with roller skates in it. It's like, put them on. She's like, okay. And then he makes the dog.
And it's like, is there a back door where she just like steps right onto the boardwalk? Because she crosses the street behind the dog. And I'm like, yes, there are service dogs who know how
street that is not one of them.
But Hank does not seem.
Hank is not one of those dogs. And yeah. And so he takes her on a nightmare ride where she's being pulled by this dog. And I'm like watching it. I'm like, oh, this is awful. I'm so terrified. Like, I'm terrified that her skate is going to like hit a divot in the sidewalk and she's going to face plant. And then, and then it ends with them kissing by the beach, and she tells him that she's pregnant from the night with the phone sex. I was like, that's a very good, like, throwback.
And then it gets even better because he says, are you sure it's mine? And she says,
I made a lot of calls that night. And then that's it. Then it ends.
Yeah, I mean, trope-wise, this is a play on Cyrano, but not including the... Is she really ugly and or does it really matter? How do you feel about the main couple? Because I love Jeanine Garofalo. I think Ben Chaplin is really, cute in this. What I think about, because I do feel like Noelle is kind of also main character. Like, even if she's not romantically part of like the main couple. But I think what's maybe missing there is she needs something more than hotness. Because like, yes, if they're just clicking, he might not notice that she's not the same in person. But I think she needs to be funnier. Even if it's like unintentionally, she needs one more character trait to make it
Yeah, I would be right there with you. I mean, I like Jeanine Garofalo in this movie. You're rooting for her and Brian to get together. You're rooting for like this ruse to drop. And yeah, I do feel like probably I wanted Uma to be like more of a actual threat to Abby a little bit, right? Because like she's pretty sure, but like it's very clearly she's not Abby. And so like what is something that Abby has that Uma also has just in like a different, manifestation of it that kind of puts her on like, ooh, like he could actually fall in love with her thinking it's Abby. Because you for me it's like you kind of know that he's always gonna know in the back of his head that it's not, something's not quite jiving. So yeah,
there are basically no actual side characters in this movie.
I know, Jamie Foxx, that's kind
of Jamie Foxx, kind of, and the asshole boyfriend Roy.
Yeah,
but even they are just like very briefly there to bounce off. No real villains. Yeah. Roy is kind of a villain, but he's also just like
he disappears after. So he's like a villain at the beginning, and then he's kind of like, and I'm not around anymore. No real explanation.
Do you have a favorite part?
I mean, I do. I did like the, like, okay, he's coming over. Wow, gotta, wacky, wacky. Gotta throw mayonnaise on my face. Yeah, I mean, it's maybe that. You know what it was? Because it felt like actual stakes is when Uma decides, I can't go through with it. Take me to the radio station. Mm-hmm. And then the radio station comes on. You know, like, all of that felt like actual stakes that this movie suddenly had. So I think I like that. What about you?
I like the parts where Abby and Noelle are hanging out, where they're just like walking around talking. I also like the trying to get ready scene. There's a ton of things I like, but those are my favorite parts.
All right.
And I mean, the ending is cute. We both agree, right?
Yeah. I like the ending. I like the joke. It's a good joke to end the movie on.
And also, like, you kind of have to end it like that, because if they started talking at all about what happened, it would just be really weird. You have to just, like, sort of imagine that being wiped clean. So this is really interesting. On Rotten Tomatoes, this has an 85% fresh rating from critics and a 56% fresh rating from audiences. It has a 6.2 on IMDb. Interesting. And I could see this for movie critics in sort of the mid-90s, this being kind of like a breath of fresh air, because it is kind of in that family of like Singles and Reality Bites, but it doesn't really have, it's not cynical as such. It's a much sweeter, but still kind of clever and like fun movie that, while you do get a little bit of the, men only care about looks, oh no, they don't, there isn't as much of the sort of gross sexism or misogyny or man-hating or whatever as maybe got a lot of in the 90s.
Yeah.
What would you give this out of 10 doggies?
I was going to say turtles. Turtle butts.
Okay. How many turtle butts out of 10?
All right. I mean, I just had such a hard time differentiating, as I mentioned now a few times, like the movie's thesis about appearances and beauty and worth versus like what the characters are feeling. And I can't parse out like what is intentional and what is like, you know, implied, or what is kind of like subtext. You know, I just like it all kind of muddies together. So for me, like, I just had a really hard time with this movie. It's got some funny lines, but it made me cringe more than it made me enjoy it. So I'm going to give it like a 4. I know. God, you should see Julia's face right now. She's appalled. I told you, I'm like, it's got some good jokes, but like it didn't do it for me.
All right.
This may be our biggest spread, I think.
I think I would probably give this like an 8 or an 8.5. Part of me is just like 9, 10, because like it still gives me those good feelings. And while parts of it are cringy, it's still like, it's sad when part of our criteria are, does it make me feel bad because it has been 25 years or how?
Yeah. Right. And I'm old.
No, just like, and, you know, they have a lot of weird ideas and stuff, but yeah. Still like there are flaws in it, and it would be really hypocritical of me to also be like, well, it's okay that he shows up because he's British, you know. So like an 8 or an 8.5.
That's this may be our biggest spread.
It might be.
I'm trying to think. What was there any other movies we like wildly disagreed on? I know there's one movie I hated. I can't remember what it was though.
I don't think we've disagreed this broadly.
Yeah, I guess
tune in next week to see if there is any more of this podcast or something.
Yeah, Julia does look like she's about to murder me.
So we've talked about some of the things that would fix this movie. How would you make this movie better?
I kept thinking about it. I'm like, to me, the fix of this movie is, you know, I hadn't thought about it, but what you brought up about Uma, like giving her like an added strong characteristic would be really good. I also think that, I want, and I don't know how to do this without like ruining the dramatic tension of the movie, but like, I want Brian to be a little smarter. Like, he's like, wow, your voice is different and you act totally different. But then when you're on the phone, you're like, the Abby that I know.
It's because, like, to speak with Jamie Foxx, it's because he's thinking with his little head instead of his big head.
Yeah. So there's a part, I don't know. I wanted more like hijinks of them almost being caught.
Yeah, because like if they would have to do tons of stupid explaining about why this is different or why you don't like that, or, you know.
Yeah. I think that, because I also think that for me would make it like a little bit more farcical, which...
You basically want more roller skates.
I want, yes, just everyone on roller skates. That's the make it weird.
Ah, here for it.
What's your fix?
Well, like I said, the Uma thing, but I, and maybe this is obvious, like I want Uma and Janine to hang out more, and also like not talk about their looks or about men or their insecurities, because I want to hang out with them. And then, you know, the thing I always go to is queering movies, but I could see them as a throuple. Like an actual throuple, yeah. Not just like the three main characters. Because it's not that Noelle is hot and mean, or that she's,
right,
you know, she's just a different kind of person. And like, I could totally see Noelle and Abby being together.
Yeah.
And like the three of them, yeah. I think, you know, they make, what is it that Abby says? The two of us together make the perfect political prisoner. We starve and act self-righteous. But, you know, they could also be the perfect girlfriend together and separately.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how would we make this weirder? Because I got kind of, I had several different thoughts. One was more animals. Just like, you know, yes, go just absolutely. Dr. Doolittle. Just go bananas.
That's, yeah, okay.
And then I was like, do we go dark here? Do we actually go full on get him drunk and Abby sleeps with him under the pretense that she is Noelle? Like, do we just like, do...
Oh, and they, like, switch?
Do
and...
all of them... Like, do they just... Both of them sleep with him, but in, like, various level of intoxication, it just, like, gets darker and more uncomfortable, and, like, the lies don't just, like... Maybe not to the point where they have to kill someone to protect their lie, but just, like, have it not be like, oh, this is a darker indie movie, but just, like, off the rails. We're like, what happened here?
Yeah. Yeah. I dig that. That'd be fun.
What about you?
So mine was actually Dr. Doolittling her.
Okay.
So the reason she's so good at her job is that she can understand animals and they can understand her. And so what you would then get is like Hank the dog and her cat and all this stuff. And all these animals who start to like know the truth. This is where you get the title.
Is this like in that movie Joe's Apartment where all the cockroaches try to like set him up both for better or
yes.
for worse?
So I was thinking like all the – I wasn't thinking about that. But yes, that is like – because Joe's Apartment is a rom-com.
Sort of.
But yeah, you get all the animals like know that she's Abby and she's Noelle and that, you know, they're kind of tricking Ben.
And some of them are for it. Some of them are against it.
Yes. And you get this like whole like contingency of like, and then you get like the funny scenes of like her talking to the cat and trying to like talk to Brian while she's really talking to the cat to get the cat to shut up about it and stop pestering,
really,
you know,
really
so you get
funny.
These like wacky animal hijinks, them trying to like set a romantic table for them, you know.
I like it. So somewhere between like Dr. Doolittle and Cinderella.
Yeah, yeah. And they're trying to help set them up. So like at the end when Hank is like dragging her on roller skates, maybe Hank came to the radio station
without
with
Brian's
the roller skates
knowledge.
Without Brian and then rolled her to Brian. I don't know.
I like that. Actually, when you said that, it also made me think it would be really funny if Noelle was like a part-time model and a part-time animal whisperer. So she totally believes that she can talk to animals and Abby's
but
an
actual. She can't.
She can't. So like she keeps trying to like help out with the animals. And in this version, Abby does not talk to animals. She's just an actual vet. So you get all this, like they both know stuff about animals, but Noelle as Abby is just really weird about it.
I like that. I like that. See, because to me, that this is where the title actually makes like real sense, mm-hmm. because it is like the truth about cats and dogs is that they are trying to set us up with each other. They're like, oh, it's kind of like the lake house. This is the, oh my God. And then this is in the same cinematic universe as the lake house where the dog
Jack shows up
is in charge of everything.
Actually, it would be really funny if like the dog is for them, but the cat likes this other guy who lives in the building. So he's trying to set her up with someone else.
Like, yeah, and I'm a cat person too, but cats are very aloof.
Oh, same. But did we learn anything from this movie?
I think I learned that I actually think I had this movie in higher esteem in my head, and then rewatching it, it dropped a little bit. So I learned that nostalgia is not always a score booster.
Oh yeah, no, totally. Sometimes it's like don't revisit your heroes.
Yeah. Because I remember this being a lot more charming than I found it this time around. Again, with my apologies to Julia.
I learned that maybe we should have a Juninuary or a Junine or something because I want to watch more Janine Garofalo movies.
I know. She is really good in this. I will say that.
Next week, we'll be talking about Always Be My Maybe. You can find our show notes at theincomparable.com/chickflickfix. Again, you can support us on Patreon so that we can buy roller skates. On patreon.com/chickflickfix. We're at chickflickfix on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to give us a review somewhere, please do. We'll be back next week. Say goodbye, AJ.
Goodbye, AJ.
I'm sending flaming poo to your house as we speak.